Kurt, do you know what VE is?
B-E?
V.
Victor Edgar.
Oh.
Echo.
Whatever.
Victor. One step worse than VD?
No. Okay, I don't even want to share what the real answer is with you, because that's great.
No, I have no idea.
Welcome to Nerd Burger, episode 44.
44? Who would have thunk we would have got this far?
Not me. Wait, no.
Who are you? And who are you?
I'm Mike.
And I'm Craig.
How's it going, Craig?
Fine. I got a hot shower today. That was nice.
As opposed to...
the cold shower that I had yesterday morning.
Ew.
Because my hot water heater, sorry,
water
heater.
Out.
Yeah. What some people will call a hot water heater, what I call a water heater, crapped out on me. And I went into the shower yesterday and was like, oh, this is going to be wonderful. Woke me up. I was wide awake when I went drove into work.
I think I would have just put on extra deodorant and clean clothes and called it, you know, good enough.
Yeah. So how are you doing?
Fine.
Fine?
Yeah.
House guest, all good?
Oh, yeah. The legendary chair girl is with us this weekend. Yes.
One of your wife's friends from many, many, many years ago.
Yes.
They don't live in the same city anymore, but now she's here. Yeah, because I walked in and you remarked, you did a double take.
Yeah.
Because normally I walk in and Allison's sitting in the living room. And I looked and I said, that's not Allison's hair. That's Teresa's hair.
Yeah.
All righty. Speaking of guests.
Yes.
We have a guest. And it's my brother Kurt again.
Hey, Kurt.
From the wilds.
Hey, how's it going?
The wilds of Wisconsin.
So what's the temperature there right now?
Oh, it's like a balmy one. I'm guessing. I think I got a few degrees below zero last night, so it's probably about one right now.
So we went from last week talking with Joey, who's in California.
Sunny and 70 degrees.
Filled with puppy dogs and rainbows, mm-hmm. to 1 degree. Ugh.
It's 26 here.
Yeah. It was chilly this morning when I came over, but that's okay. I'll survive. And you'll be fine, too, up there, I'm sure. You've got heat and all that fun stuff.
Do you have heated water?
Yes, I don't know why. Why would you heat hot water?
It's right,
hot water heater.
You don't have a hot water heater. You have
Does it get hotter?
Water.
You can only heat it so much until it turns to steam.
Yeah,
well, it's still
our
water.
Water system. Mm-hmm. Yeah, our whole water system hotter. Is just geothermal here in Wisconsin, so it already comes out hot. Then we heat it even more, or something like that.
Something. Well, do we want to dive in a little bit? Some news. Very sad. This is a sad week.
Sad?
Yes.
Aww.
Somebody left us. Okay. He scrambles for his phone.
Who's that?
Russell Johnson,
mm-hmm.
the professor from Gilligan's Island, one of the great television scientists and kind of a nerd, I suppose, passed away this week.
What did he pass away of?
He was 89. So he passed away of being old, of living on 17 borrowed years.
Is that what it says?
He
was old?
No, he died at home, peaceful in his sleep.
Okay.
There was something more to it. I don't have it right in front of me this very moment. Let's dig.
Do we have digging music?
Kidney failure.
Oh, really?
89 years and the kidneys, I guess, said, okay.
They crapped out like your water heater.
Yeah, except the kidneys are much more important than the water heater.
Yeah, and not as easy to restart.
Kurt, do you miss the professor already? I do.
Well, of course. He was MacGyver before there was a MacGyver.
That's true.
He was making stuff out of nothing, yeah.
making everything out of coconuts.
Making everything but fixing the boat.
What the heck is that?
Sorry, there's a woodpecker on the outside of the house right now.
Oh, wonderful. I'd rather deal with the trains by my place than this intermittent woodpecker.
It's the first time it's happened.
All right.
Speaking of kidney failure and dead TV legends.
Okay.
Dave Madden.
Dave Madden.
A.K.A. Reuben Kincaid from the Partridge Family also died of kidney and congestive heart failure.
How old was he?
82.
He died of having 8 or 10 years too many. Well, the average is 72 or something like that, isn't it? For a man. So.
And like 76 for women.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Hey, Kurt, do you have anybody who died? It comes in threes, right? So,
like, anyone famous that died of kidney failure?
Well, anybody famous that died recently. Can we round this out to three?
Yeah, who's going to be the third? That was what we were talking about in the office yesterday.
Oh, really?
No, I got nothing on that one. I don't know.
There was a whole episode of 30 Rock that focused on that when Tracy was thinking he was going to die.
Stay tuned to Nerdburger's Celebrity Death Watch.
Who's going to die next week? Do you have any other news things? Oh, yeah, he's shaking his head. Here we go.
Going to the science.
Ooh, science news. Is this? Are we going to get learned something?
I don't like that article.
All right.
Skipping to more science.
Okay.
Well, did you hear about Google's new contact lenses?
Okay.
Smart contact lenses. They have got wires and chips in them.
I'm not a fan of that. On my eyeball? No, sir.
Google loves wearables, and this time it's getting even closer to your body with a developmental smart contact lens. Through miniaturized electronics, it can apparently measure the levels of glucose in your tears, offering diabetics an easier way to monitor their condition without the needles and the blood. A tiny, really tiny wireless chip and glucose sensor are wedged between two layers of biocompatible contact lens material, and Google is saying that it's already working on embedding tiny LED lights for notifications, too.
Oh, that's no good. You're driving down the road, beep, beep, 75 miles beep, 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 an hour, and all of a sudden lights start flashing in your eyes.
Or you're in traffic and you're stuck and you can't.
Just because your blood sugar's a little low and you got to take your insulin.
Scrambling for your needles.
Okay, well, what about people who are both epileptic?
Oh, no.
And diabetic? Well, it's a good thing I know that my blood sugar's low because I'm going to go into a seizure now.
I'm seizing.
That's a good one. The first thing that I thought of was, and everything's fine until you get hit in the face with something, and then all of a sudden you've got little wires and microchips stuck in your eyeball.
Mm-hmm. Oh. The thing I thought of was, of course, all the machines are going to turn on us in the near future. So are they going to just start doing things, you know, just what I need is tiny machines in my eyes that turn on me.
That suddenly grow little legs and claws, pincher claws, and start tearing your retinas out.
They start spelling out words in the little lights. Sorry, Mike, we're taking over now.
Resistance is futile. Your biological uniqueness will be added to our own.
Yeah. Wow, that's 2 weeks in a row with that.
Yeah.
Well, smarter people than us have come up with even more problems with these.
Well, first of all, I'd like to say, Google, how about you get the glasses working? And affordable.
Yeah,
and,
under $1,500.
And all that fun stuff. Instead of just being something that, you know, somebody who has a crap ton of money can spend their crap ton of money on, or giving away samples to people like Kevin Smith, who was talking it up like crazy on a podcast recently because he got to live in the future.
Well,
before you start sticking circuits in my eyeball. Jeez.
Om Malik, who runs a tech blog called
Om
Giga Om.
O-H-M.
O-M.
Oh, it's not O-H-M.
No.
That's too bad.
Yeah. It's not an audio blog. It's just a general computer tech blog.
Nice. Well done. Well done.
Yeah. One diabetic's take on Google's smart contact lenses.
Okay.
One in 19 people on this planet have diabetes. I am one. Then he goes on to describe what it's like to live with diabetes and how common it is in the general population. And then he gets to the meat of it. So when I read about Google's smart contact lens project, which allows these lenses to measure blood sugar levels, for a very brief instant, I was excited. It seemed like that finally we are getting to a place where needles, blood-soaked alcohol swabs, and cotton balls are going to be history.
No, they're not. Yeah. They're everywhere.
Well, for this purpose.
Oh, okay.
In this particular application. But after the initial excitement was over, cold reality set in. It also prompted me to ask the question, why is it that a company with such good intentions fails to ask itself very basic questions? something a normal human being would ponder before embarking on a scientific quest. For example, why would they ignore the fact that as a diabetes patient, it is generally recommended that I not wear contact lenses? Yes, I understand that there are many different opinions about this, but it is generally thought of as smart to not wear contact lenses as they always carry the risk of increased complications for diabetics.
Jeez, well done. Yeah. Good job, Google.
Your robot contact lenses realize that you're a diabetic, and they announce it's like bright lights. You're a diabetic. Take these out right now.
Or even better, they jump out on their own. Oh. Scurry across the table and climb back
again
into the
while
case.
You're driving, and then you're suddenly blind.
Yeah, there you go. Because you need them for your eyesight as well. They're not
as
just
you're going 75 miles an hour down the interstate,
blood sugar, huh?
Scrambling Jeez. For your. For your
this
needles.
Is a terrible idea. Now, I find myself wondering, you know, as I do with a lot of these types of things, it's like, you know, are we doing this because we need to,
or because we can? Well, he kind of gets into that, and Google's approach. I cannot get over what seems to be a tone deaf approach by Google scientists. It also highlights Google's fundamental challenge. It fails to think about people as people. Instead, it treats them as an academic or an engineering problem. Instead of trying to understand the needs of actual people, they emerge with an elegant technological solution. It is not just this one time. Google Plus, their social network, is a fail because it fundamentally isn't social or about people. It is an effort to solve Google's need for social data for better advertising using machines. That's why anytime you try to use any Google service, they force you into Google Plus because they want to get all your information. So they can
you
sell
looked
it.
Like you were grabbing boobies there when you pantomimed that.
Well, I think that's how Google feels about your information. It's something to covet and
trying to get a handful
lust
of.
After.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Similarly, Google Glasses are a cringeworthy assault to the social interactions of normals. But because a certain subset of Googlers, including co-founders Sergey Brin and Larry Page, have a cyborg fetish, it's okay for them to make that design.
Cyborg fetish. Nice.
Oh. And he goes on and on. But
sure.
Makes a good point. We'll link to that.
Some local Mountain State news.
Mountain State news?
Colorado. Oh. What did Colorado just do recently?
Something that a lot of people are really happy about and now really, really hungry.
Yes, the snack industry
really,
has gone through
really
the roof.
Tired.
They legalized marijuana.
Yeah.
And along the roadways, I think I got this from you, Kurt, on Facebook. This is worth sharing. Along the roadways, you know how there are mile markers?
I heard about this.
Well, they decided that they didn't want people constantly stealing the 420 mile marker along whatever freeway.
It was I-70.
On Interstate 70 east of Denver. They decided to change that mile marker to 419.99.
Yep.
And they moved it 50 feet.
Did they really?
Yeah, they did.
Well, at least they're being accurate.
My other favorite thing I think I saw on Twitter on like January 2nd or January 3rd, I saw someone retweet the Wyoming State Police. Basically, their tweet that said, please don't bring your marijuana into our state.
Oh, okay. Well, Seattle. Or not Seattle, but Washington. Get on top of these things. You're going to have to, you know, crunch out a couple of 419.99 mile markers. I'm sure there's something.
The 420 signs are already gone. I'm telling you.
Those might have been gone the day before.
Yeah.
Everything went legal. Somebody was, hey, we should go get this, man.
Although it is pot smokers we're talking about, so they may not have thought about it until April 21st
That's entirely
of
possible.
This year. So, Washington, you still may have time.
Yeah. Well, they probably had the great idea to do it. And then they got sidetracked into watching, you know, Weekend at Bernie's 2 and eating Funyuns.
Funyuns.
What else you got?
I have some more annoying tech news.
Oh, good.
That's always good.
Craig, you recently purchased a new TV.
Yes, I did. It's a smart TV.
Yes, a Samsung smart TV.
Yes.
Have you had any pop-ups yet on your smart TV?
Nope.
Because some people have
okay.
on their Samsung TVs, they're getting pop-up advertisements.
Jeez.
And there's a guy, David Chartier, his Tumblr, he put it up there, and it took him forever to figure out how to get rid of the pop-up because it said you needed a specific app.
Okay.
A Samsung app, but it wasn't available. Like, you can't actually download it.
That's no good.
So he had to jump through all these hoops to get it to go away.
Jeez. I hope that doesn't happen to me.
I want my TVs to be dumb.
I don't use my smart TV to the extent that I probably could. Down the road,
because
I
already have the...
Because, I mean, right now I've got it. It's a television, and I get my Netflix, and I can do Hulu Plus and Amazon Instant and all that kind of stuff through there. There's all sorts of other apps and things. I've watched a couple of things on YouTube on my television, and I've searched. But there's a bunch of stuff on there that I just haven't explored yet, and I'm not sure how much I really will use it. So hopefully I won't get so deep into using all the little bits and pieces of the smart TV that that'll become a problem.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't bought any apps, for example. I've installed a few just to do the things like Netflix. It's free stuff, but that's about it. Any news, Kurt? You got anything you want to share?
Any news?
Yeah. Anything? Nothing?
I didn't necessarily catch anything other than I was mad I forgot about the 420 thing.
That's okay.
Is it two yet there?
Is it what?
Two.
Oh, two degrees?
2 degrees.
I don't know. Let me send my dog out and see how fast he comes back in.
I've got one more thing.
Okay.
There's a thing floating around the internet. I believe it's a high school level paper. It's an essay about quantum physics.
Okay.
That a student wrote. And I'm just going to read the first few lines to you, see if you can figure out what's going on.
Jeez, you're just going to do this to make me feel dumb.
Never has a man influenced physics so profoundly as Niels Bohr in the early 1900s. Going back to this time period, little was known about atomic structure. Bohr set out to...
I know this one.
Oh, yeah, I know where this is going. I've seen it, yeah.
Yeah, so what he did was he wrote this essay... So
he rickrolled his essay.
Yeah, the first word of every line is a word in the... song Never Gonna Give You Up. So it says never going to give you up, never going to let you down, never going to run around and desert you, and it goes on and on. And there's an image with each word highlighted so you can see it.
Sure.
But yeah, he rickled his teacher there.
It's a lot of fun.
And if one of my students pulls that off, I would, yeah, you're getting bonus points.
Nerdburger audience, you've been rickrolled.
Yeah, you thought you were going to get nerd stuff.
Nope.
We should just play the whole song.
Okay.
Now, tell me.
Nerdburger bringing you jokes from the internet.
From 5 years ago. But he is really, really ginger. I'll say that.
Oh, you're watching the video?
He's a really white guy. And he does not have that his voice doesn't match his face. Mm-mm. It's so bizarre. But
or
yeah.
His body. He's tiny.
That's true. He's a thin little guy. He should be like a big Reuben Studdard looking guy.
Mm-hmm.
But he's
to
not.
Go with the voice,
yeah.
or if he looks like he does his
voice should kind of sound like this.
He should sound like Justin Bieber.
Never gonna give you up.
Okay. Kurt, you wanted to talk about something kind of dorky.
Yeah, I brought one of the nerdiest things I could possibly think of to the podcast today, and that's marching band.
Whoa.
My goodness. Okay, here's where we lose all our listeners. Marching
all
band.
Are we up to 9 now? I think you said on the last podcast. 9.
I believe the count is at 9.
We're hovering in the single digits. So, marching band.
Marching band. Yeah.
I was in marching band.
And I was in marching band.
I was not in marching band.
You didn't do anything musical as a child.
I didn't do anything useful as a child.
He doesn't do anything useful now.
Continuing the tradition.
Other than edit the podcast. I want you to continue doing
that. There is that, yes.
Yay.
So
I was going to do a little education, especially of Mike, since he's going to know nothing about this.
Nerdburger me.
Sweet.
Yay. All right, so.
Learning with Kurt.
Anyway, bands are very, very much an American thing. If you look at European traditions, they're the orchestra tradition. The band thing goes back to, the late 1800s, John Philip Sousa and guys like that started creating bands and traveling all over. And then when they traveled, people would watch them and like what they saw, and then they'd start school groups and they'd start community groups. And so to this day, we have very much a band thing in the United States. Like I said, you don't see that in Europe. You don't hear of the high school band in Reykjavik. It doesn't exist. They have the high school orchestra. And since we have bands, we therefore have marching bands. And the oldest tradition being the military tradition, since that's where all the bands come from. So you're talking straight lines, square corners,
geometric designs and geometric shapes when you're marching, playing lots of marches and military and patriotic music. And,
sure.
Yeah, that tradition still is around a little bit, but it's pretty much held on to by the military itself, as well as some of the old military colleges. Texas A&M is a famous one, Virginia Tech. But it's kind of disappeared from the high schools. They've moved on to what Craig and I would be more familiar with, which is called core style marching. Because
core style? Because you have to work your core?
Corps. Yes.
Ah, okay. Core.
Yeah, well, as in drum and bugle corps.
Gotcha.
That's the style Craig would remember from high school with low rolling steps and 8-to-5 marching. Does this all ring a bell for you?
Kinda. I'm gonna have dreams tonight.
I can't help thinking corpse style. Like you're all marching like zombies.
We're all doing the thriller dance with our
with your
instruments.
Giant drums strapped to your chests and makeup.
Right.
Tattered uniforms and okay.
All uniforms were kind of tattered, but that's just because they were old.
Yeah, that's true.
That's true, especially for you. I think we got nicer ones by the time I got to school. Anyway, you know, that's come out of the drum and bugle corps tradition, which is something that came later. And Wisconsin's home to one of the more famous ones, the Madison Scouts. And there's a few others from Wisconsin and the rest of the Midwest. Drum Corps International is their governing body, much in the same way. There's a Drum Corps International Championship that's pretty much all just United States bands, much in the same
international.
Way.
International?
Yeah, international.
For the primarily American.
Is that like the World Series of baseball?
Series. The baseball, you know, every once in a while, the one team from Canada gets to go.
Does Jamaica send those four dudes? No, that's the bobsled thing. Never mind.
Team, copyright 2014 Kirk Campbell. I'm going to write that movie. but that's, they emphasize more artistry and music over, you know, the old school military style. So your lower step, rolling across the field, creating more complex formations on the field and more movement and motion on the, you know, field show type of performance. This, sure. Like I said, kind of go back. Craig will be like, oh,
yeah, that's what we did. We made all sorts of shapes and it wasn't just, you know, line, you know, hard angles and geometric patterns. It was all swirly shapes and curves and things that we'd be moving around in the field.
Did you ever spell anything out?
Like I don't think we ever spelled anything. I think we kept
Did you not have enough people?
Well, actually, when I was in it, you could have spelled a word.
One short 3 or 4 letter word.
Could have spelled dogs.
Yeah.
Bulldogs for the, you know, D-O-G-S.
Well, it would have been great. The Ohio State University has, they do their script Ohio where it's, you know, written out like cursive, and then they have a tuba player who runs out and dots the I. We could have done that with Peshtigo.
Yeah, there you go. The biggest issue is that type of thing is only really good for the people in like the top few rows of the bleachers.
Yeah, yeah.
Most of the people aren't going to see. They're just going to be like, oh, well, they're in four clumps. Yeah. Oh, those are letters? Oh, good for them.
Very true. Yeah. You have to kind of, you know, I'm a band director and I actually write my own show. So I actually was taught and learned how to think about that. When you space things, you got to do a lot more with the vertical than with the horizontal for it to look like anything. Because the angle's so low in a high school, you know, high school stands.
It's like writing things on the roadway.
Right. Kind of. The letters have to be really tall.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I haven't ever written out words. We've done our, you know, block M.
Nerdburger Challenge! Next fall, write out words on the field.
And have someone from the top row take a picture.
Send it to you?
Absolutely.
Is that what I got to do?
That would be awesome. Nerdburgershow.com.
You know what, Kurt? I dare you.
The tuba player can run out and be the dot.
I dare you. I dare you. I double dog dare you. I triple dog dare you.
Okay, if you say so.
Yeah.
There's a breach of etiquette there.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah.
And that's...
I went right for the throat.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of the larger tradition you see today came out of that.
Right.
You know, most high school bands are doing that. The drum and bugle corps, a lot of colleges are doing that. And then there's, you know, one other one that's kind of different, the show bands. We think there's a couple different styles. There's the UW style, the high step.
Right.
University of Wisconsin, the high step. And they love to play movie songs and Broadway songs and things like that. And
they're fun to watch.
They're a lot of fun to watch. All those types of bands, the show bands.
You don't have to just be into the music. They do a show. They put on, there's a lot of movement, a lot of, it's almost dancing.
Yeah.
It is.
There's a few other UW, you know. Big Ten schools that kind of do that. And then there's the Southern version, which is like the historically black colleges, you know, like Southern and Grambling. And I know there's one in your neck of the woods in Atlanta, but I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head.
Me neither. But
yeah. Georgia Tech.
They kind of do that too. If you ever, you know, if you ever, have you ever seen the movie
Georgia State. Drumline?
What?
If you've ever seen the movie Drumline, that's what we're talking
yeah,
about.
Where they're, it's really exaggerated movements and they're high stepping and they're like their elbows are way up.
Yeah, and they're again, they're basically dancing on the field.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. it's a big show. It's a big production. Again, yeah. Also fun to watch.
Yeah, lots of fun to watch.
Sounds exhausting.
You got to be in shape for that
stuff. I've had students that have gone on to march at the University of Wisconsin, and they lose toenails during band camp.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's one of my greatest fears:
losing a nail.
Is like, well, no, the fear is like. Realizing that it's loose and then just slowly peeling it and just having it come off. Yeah. Like Brundlefly and Seth Brundle and the Fly.
That actually,
when he just kind of goes, oh, look at that. And it just opens up like a trap door.
Yeah. That happened to me on my foot, although there was a lot more blood and pain and
jeez.
And it was a very slow process.
Okay. Back to,
something more pleasant, like marching band
or dropping your keys.
Yeah. Oh, well, that was my dog. Oh. Of course, he'd go shake himself as he walked away.
Hey, Herbie. Anyway, who's a good boy?
Who's a good boy? He can't hear you.
Even if he wouldn't respond. That dog is so mellow. It's like he lives in Colorado. Hey,
tell him I have a treat.
So, Mike, if you ever wanted to go see, I brought up a few. If you ever wanted to see what we were talking about, you could go find a video. Texas A&M does a really good job with military style. Let's go Wisconsin with the Madison Scouts with core style. And then of course the University of Wisconsin or one of the Southern bands like Grambling usually has one of the stronger marching programs.
Can you send us,
go put a clip of Drumline on.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, if you want to send us any of those as links, if you sure. find anything
I'll
particular,
I'll send you a link of each and you can kind of put them there.
Okay. I'm familiar with the whole thing. My parents used to go to the competition in Madison every year.
Oh yeah.
And watch it. I did recently, I guess it was last year at some point, somebody somewhere did like, it was like their rendition of Back to the Future. And they, they made like the Back to the Future logo and a DeLorean and, all the stuff. And they kind of, did it to the actual orchestral music.
Now,
yeah.
Are they going to do it again next year?
What?
Are they going to do it again next year?
They should.
With big, big puffy high top shoes and double barrel neckties. And self-drying, hoverboards. Somebody floats
Doesn't
through on a hoverboard.
Have, like, a
that would be awesome.
Stainless steel colander on his head.
What's
something
that?
Like that? Doesn't someone have something that looks a lot like a stainless steel colander on his head?
Maybe.
I think Griff or one of his buddies did. Yeah.
Yeah. Fax machines.
You're fired.
McFry. No. All right, back to geez.
All right, so yeah, much digression. Yeah, well, those are kind of the big three traditions. Then there's one other type of band. That's what I was setting you up for. That okay. Some people will argue that's not really a marching band.
Oh, here we go. We got marching
band or the scramble band.
Marching band elitists don't think they're a real band.
They were hipsters. They were hipsters before there were hipsters.
Wow, that's the ultimate hipster.
Yeah. And the theory on this is basically they go on the field and they make a formation and then they play a song and they scramble to another formation and play a song. And they don't actually, move in time or march or anything like that.
I got to say, I'm starting to feel like an elitist because that doesn't sound like a marching band either.
No.
that sounds like playing a song and then having some exercise.
What's so hipster about that? Are they all wearing thick black glasses and drinking lattes?
Close. But it came out of the Ivy League schools, presumably because number one, they're not really famous for music. So it's not like you have like top level music programs at them. And also because, supposedly they don't have the time to actually practice and rehearse like a real field show.
They're too busy
so they
studying
just throw something together haphazardly and then put it on the field.
Yeah. See, that's
we're too smart for your fancy transitions.
That's disappointing.
Yes.
Those are supposed to be the best schools, right? Shouldn't they be the best at everything they do? If they're going to do it well.
They're the best at handing out A's.
All right.
That's true. Grade inflation. But the probably the most famous Ooh. Of all those scramble bands, I was thinking with the other day when I got the message saying, hey, you want to do the show? And it would happen to be right around New Year's. And, of course, I saw the Rose Bowl parade and such. And I went, oh, yeah, we got to talk about the Stanford band.
Stanford, okay.
Stanford University. More specifically, they are called the Leland Stanford Junior University Marching Band. That's their official name. And the pause is necessary. You got to put the pause in there. Or the LSJ UMB. And they're pretty famous slash infamous in the world of marching bands. They're a completely student-run organization, and they've gotten themselves into some trouble over the years because they like to make their shows funny and amusing. So it's not enough to not march. Then they also have to, you know, offend people.
Oh, here we go. All right.
Awesome.
So I brought a little game. You want to play a game?
Well, first I have to ask you this. Does Stanford ever play this song?
That's Stanford University. I would actually have that in their library, and they've played it before.
No, Mike was shaking his head at me. I think every time we mention Stanford on the show, I should get to play that.
I'm sure there's a Lamont High School somewhere that has done that.
Sure. Okay.
All right. They're famous for getting themselves into trouble. The band has been suspended many times over the years.
Okay.
The band, as it currently stands, started kind of in the 60s. There was a change in leadership in the band director position at Stanford, and they used to have like a more traditional band, and they brought in a new director who was not necessarily liked by the students right away. And the story goes, he won them over by ceding all control of the band to them and basically just letting it be a student-run organization. So for the past 40-some years, this is the way the band has been. They've been a scramble band. And yeah, like I said, they've gotten themselves into a bit of trouble. So I brought a game where we're going to see if you can figure out the type of trouble they've gotten themselves into. And I named it. I named it after the Stanford Band's 2003 album. Yes, they release albums. And the name of this game is This Is Why We Can't Have Nice Things. So the name of the game is this. I'm gonna give you some background of a famous incident in the band's history. There's a couple of these that are really obscure and strange, but most of them I think are very gettable. You'll be able to figure out kind of what they did with a few hints. And we'll go back and forth. And, well, you know, I just tossed a coin here that you can't see because it's an audio podcast, so you just have to trust me.
Well done. And Mike will go first. Okay, so we're not going to buzz in. You're going to question Mike, and then you're going to question me.
We have an even number, so I figure what I'll do is I'll give each of you a shot, and then if the person doesn't have it, then the other person can steal.
Okay.
Just to give you a little idea, I picked a couple things from early in their history, and then most of these to tell you about to kind of get your brain thinking in the right way. In 1970, halftime show versus Arkansas, the band establishes a tradition. Which has been done many, many times since then, where they all drop their pants in unison on the field.
Okie dokie.
Okay. The 1971 Rose Bowl parade, the band got themselves in a little bit of trouble before the parade. They had plans. The Rose Bowl parade committee got wind of them. And now, to this day, the band, anytime they perform at the Rose Bowl parade, must have all their plans reviewed by the Tournament of Roses ahead of time. Due to their plan to ride golf carts in the parade, because it's really long. A keg on a red wagon and distribute beer to the crowd.
Wow. I don't think one keg would have done it.
True. Maybe okay, there's
so, a so little it's, mini. It's likely that these are college shenanigans that we're dealing with. All right.
They've done a few other things, but let's get going with the game here. So, Mike, you're ready.
Yep.
Here's your hints. First of all, this happened in 1986. It's a halftime show versus Washington State. And this has to do with something they spelled out on the field. And here's your hint. Anagram. And silence ensues.
I don't know.
No idea. Craig, your turn.
Anagram. What?
This one's, I would say, is one of the tougher ones. But I thought maybe someone might. It's a very famous anagram. I'll put it that way.
Oh, maybe I just don't
Illuminati?
Know. Did they anagram Washington?
Nope.
Okay. Because I was wondering maybe if the word was in there somewhere. Because you
That would have been really good. No.
No.
They created an anagram show, and at one point on the field, they spelled out N-C-U-T. They got a lot of trouble for that one. Everything in their show were all anagrams, and they spelled N-C-U-T. They later claimed that it was supposed to be N-E-U-T, which was an anagram for tune, but a mistake was made by the performers.
N-C-U-T. I'm not getting this.
Well, it's just
the one word in the
letters.
English language that still gets a reaction from people. Come on.
I don't know what you're talking about.
You know what an anagram is, right?
Yes, I do.
N-C-U-T.
Okay, never mind. Got it.
Wow.
Jeez.
That one, like I said, I mean, that's been done before.
You can go ahead and give me negative points there for that. That was, I'm embarrassed. Okay, next one.
I had to look up what an anagram was.
Okay, so we both have negative 1 points.
Negative one to negative one. Got it.
All right.
All right, so over to Craig. The halftime show versus Oregon, 1990. This was topical at the time. And what was going on in the Pacific Northwest in 1990.
Okay.
I'll give you a one-word hint, like with Mike, and it's endangered.
Hair metal was endangered by the grunge scene of the Pacific Northwest.
You don't remember back?
1990 really was 23 years ago. I was drinking a lot. It was college.
Is it my turn?
I don't got anything.
Okay, we'll go to Mike. You got something.
Was it the spotted owl?
Yes, they poked fun at the spotted owl controversy. Ding, 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 ding.
Oh, the great spotted owl controversy of 1990.
Oh, this was huge. Come on. Even Mike knew it.
Why didn't I ever? Oh, you looked it up on your Google machine.
I didn't. Apparently, I wasn't drinking as much as you.
Okay.
Oh, the band pokes fun at the spotted owl controversy by forming a chainsaw on the field.
Jeez.
Also by spelling out the word owl, O-W-L.
And cutting it in half with the chainsaw.
And then they morph it into AWOL, A-W-O-L.
Jeez. Okay, that's good. I like that. Next.
Yeah. All right, so Mike's got a point. We're at 0 to -1.
Woo!
All right, we go back to Mike. It's halftime game versus Notre Dame in 1991. And the hint is religious leadership.
Okay. They make fun of pedophile priests?
Oh, it's a little early for pedophile priests in 1991. Well,
it's never too early for pedophile priests.
Oh!
Not to say it wasn't happening.
So they made fun of the Pope?
A little needed to. I'll go over to Craig. You got something?
The Pope? Did they go after the Pope?
Not quite. They didn't go quite that high.
Cardinal.
The drum
Bishop.
Major. So, sorry, folks. Right. The drum major, Eric Selvig, dresses up in full habit and conducts the band with a wooden cross. This is an away game at South Bend at Notre Dame.
Wow.
With football Jesus on the end of the field.
A disgruntled fan leaps the fence, chases down the drum major, rips off the habit, and the fan is quoted to telling Eric, "You are, quote, going to hell for this."
Wow. That's a very Christian behavior, I must say. That or he's got a thing about naked nuns. And just thought, hey, I've got the opportunity here.
Yeah, there was a long time before they got to go back to Notre Dame.
Go in peace, my son. Okay.
Oh.
Next. All right.
Then I guess we're back to Craig here. We're still at, we'll get rid of the negatives. We'll just say it's 1-0. So we're back to Craig.
The negatives.
Giving me a free point.
Anyway, this is interesting. It's the only one on here that's not a football game. This particular performance happened at the L.A. County Courthouse in 1994. And there was a very famous trial going on at the time.
94? Okay.
Yep.
I'm going to say it involves a guy named Rodney. No, that was... O.J.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, it was O.J.
This is O.J., and specifically the jury selection of OJ was still very early in the process. 20 members of the band skipped rehearsal to attend jury selection of the O.J. Simpson trial. The most famous part of the performance that day, their performance of an arrangement of The Zombies' She's Not There.
Wow. Oh.
Wow. So basically, these people are just a bunch of douchebags.
Oh, yeah.
Stanford band members. Wow. Okay. Fine. Moving right. along.
Back to Mike.
Okay.
Later that year, halftime versus USC. Again, it's topical. And your hint is vehicle.
Later that year.
Later that year, they're playing USC in the fall.
Okay.
The courthouse thing was like early in the year.
Okay.
Summer or spring.
Did they do something with the white Bronco?
Ding, 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 ding. Yes, they did. They had to make fun of OJ again. Band members, this is at home, so they had permission to do this. They drove around the track outside the football field. They drove a white Ford Bronco covered in bloody handprints.
Wow! Oh, that's awesome.
I want to be in this band now. Wow. Okay. I got news for you real quick. This is not a marching band game show that you are doing. This is a history game show, but let's go.
Well, a little bit.
It's marching band history.
No, this is history. Everything we're talking about is history.
A lot of it's history.
Okay, go on.
All right. So the next
go one ahead here, just bring it so I can score some more negative points.
Okay. So the next one is another halftime show versus Notre Dame. This one they do at home. They don't do this on the road because they're still banned from South Bend. 1997. And this time your hint is mascots.
Wait, where is it now?
It's at home.
It's at home, but it's against Notre Dame.
Okay.
Mascots.
I have no idea. You're asking me to do something with college mascots from 97, and I don't even watch college sports now, much less in 1997.
So we throw it to Mike?
I got nothing.
I don't know what Notre Dame's mascot is. Was it something to do with Rudy?
No. It's
Notre Dame's is the fighting Irishman.
Say it again.
The Notre Dame's mascot is the fighting Irishman.
Okay, so is it a...
Ding, ding, ding. We'll give that to Craig. Okay. Yay.
He looks like he's like this with his... He's got his dukes up and he's got the little green outfit on.
Wait a minute. So we can go from Craig but to me back to Craig?
And oh, he gets come a point? On. You're like 3 points ahead of him. Knock it off.
His resting state is douchebag. We've discussed this on the podcast.
Anyway, the band puts on a show entitled, quote, "These Irish, Why Must They Fight?" Besides mocking many stereotypical Irish behaviors, the show includes a river dance homage and a potato famine joke. At one point, the announcer refers to the Irish as, quote, "stinking drunks."
and that's a mock
debate between a Catholic cardinal and the devil erupts on the field and turns into a fist fight.
Now, this is the year that South Park premiered, so okay. Kind of makes sense.
I'm just trying to equate it to my life. So it's like 97. It's like, all right, I was in grad school. What happened to me in grad school? What happened in the world? Okay.
This one is really, really kind of like the first one. It might be a real stretch. You'd have to know something kind of obscure in history, but it's still funny. So here we go.
Is this me?
Halftime. This is UCLA in 1999. They're playing halftime show against UCLA, 99. And again, it was topical at the time, but it's small. And the hint is parking violations.
No idea.
No idea.
Yeah, nothing from either one of you? No, oh, that's a shame. At the time, UCLA football players involved in a handicap parking scandal where they had forged documents to get themselves handicap parking placards, you know, college football players
with handicap parking. Okay.
So the band during halftime at one point, they formed the handicap.
I was going to say, I could have guessed that part. Let us try to guess what they do too. They make the big handicap symbol.
The Stanford doesn't actually have a mascot. They used to be the Stanford Indians until they dropped that. And now they're the Stanford Cardinal, not Cardinals, just the card as in the color. They don't actually have a mascot, but the band does. It's a big tree, an evergreen tree. So they wheel the tree in on a wheelchair during halftime.
Fun.
One of my favorites. Here we go. This is great. This one I think Craig will get. Okay. It's Craig's question.
Yeah, now that you said that.
Oh, this Halftime versus BYU, Brigham Young University, 2004. And your hint is outlawed religious practices.
Outlawed?
Outlawed religious practices. Brigham Young University.
Well, that's a Mormon thing, right?
Yep.
Okay. Mormonism isn't outlawed.
But there's something about Mormonism that is outlawed.
Oh, no alcohol?
Oh.
No drinky?
Polygamy.
Sorry, polygamy. Ding, 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 ding. The band has a dance team.
After I put everything together for you, I just loosened the pickle jar.
I knew it was polygamy. I was waiting for him to call time on you. Jeez, that dragged on forever. Fuck you. And so much. And my eight wives.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, they have a dance team, five members. They all appear in white veils on the field with the band manager proposing to each in turn. The announcer refers to marriage as, quote, the sacred bond that exists between a man and a woman and a woman and a woman and a
woman. And did they all say yes?
Sure. I don't think you'd be able to hear them down on the field. All right. This is a fun one. This is, again, a little obscure, but it's fun. This was recent, 2009, halftime again versus USC. It's topical. Wait, at the time.
The USC or the other USC?
Yes, Southern California. Okay. USC. Yep. It was topical at the time, and it has to do with an alumnus of USC again, but maybe not as well-known a one. And I'll give you the hint, late-night commercial.
Are we to me?
It's to you.
Late-night commercial, 1999.
2009. Sorry.
Oh, recent. 2009. Oh, 2009. Oh, is it Vince Schlomi?
Oh, sorry. No.
Oh.
Go over to Craig.
Nothing. I don't watch late night commercials. I don't know anything about late
night.
Can
we go back to me?
Sure, why not?
That loud guy with the beard.
Oh, no, not quite.
No, okay.
No, USC alumnus Joe Francis is the founder of Girls Gone Wild.
Okay.
And that was the time when he started getting all types of trouble.
Mm-hmm. Isn't he in jail now?
Yes, he's in jail now.
For being a colossal, well, I've used the word douchebag a lot here, but this one really applies. Because he's a real turd of a human being.
Here's the announcer's quote from the show. USC can't take all of the credit for the successes of its students. After all, it takes a special kind of man to be wanted for sexual harassment, drug trafficking, tax evasion, prostitution, child abuse, and disruptive flatulence. But that's just the kind of captain of industry Joe Francis is.
Wow. Yeah, well, he deserves every one of those.
All right, the last one here is probably the most famous incident in Stanford band history. So we'll go over to Craig. We got to go back in time to 1982.
Oh, good this Lord. I was 10.
This right. Happens at the end of the game versus Cal, University of California, Berkeley. Their big rival. Happens at the end of the game. And it's not so much what the band did as what the football team did to the band. I'll just say there were some last-second heroics. So let's see if you know. It is probably, I would argue, the most famous incident in Stanford band history.
Oh, wonderful.
I definitely am going to have to send you the video on this one. It's fun to watch.
What the football team did to the band.
Yeah.
Well, I can only assume they did, you know, there was a physical altercation or something. They went out there and pantsed them all or... I don't know.
My guess is that they carried them all around on their shoulders.
Not quite. No. Stanford scores late to take a 1-point lead over Cal with just a few seconds left on the clock. The ensuing kickoff to Cal, they begin to do the ever famous try to score on a bunch of lateral kickoff return, right? And at one point, it appears that the guy goes down before the ball comes out. At this point, the Stanford band is down by the field. Everyone thinks the game is over, so the Stanford band starts to get onto the field for their end-of-game celebration.
Okay.
It is not called down. And after a success of more laterals, Cal's Kevin Moen dodges through both players and band members to eventually score the winning touchdown.
Wow.
And then proceeds to tackle and spike himself upon band member and trombonist Gary Tyrell in the end zone.
Yeah. I think I've seen the video for this now that you describe it.
Yep.
I think I've seen this.
The field is just full of people, and here comes the Cal returnman dodging through everyone to get to the end zone at the end of the game to win. And then at the end, after he crosses the end zone, there's a trombone player with his back turned. He runs up and jumps on top of the trombone player.
Wow.
That could be a real problem, because if that trombone, because you know, I see the trombone player falling over, but the trombone hitting like slide first on the ground and coming back up and punching that guy in the face.
No, I think you can see on the video the trombone actually bends in half.
Oh, that's sad.
Yeah,
he had a bent bone. Mike's looking for a sound effect. Look for a sound effect, quick. Yeah. Okay.
2002, the Stanford band poked fun of it because it was 20 years earlier. They created a humorous reenactment of the play, including a halftime show. In their reenactment, there was a point where they are recreating the return on the field, and the band all freezes. A single band member runs out carrying a large yellow arrow to point out that Garner was down on the play before he lateraled. They still argue that to this day, that his knee was down before he lateraled at that point.
What does instant replay show to be actual truth?
It was 1982. They didn't have a ton of camera angles, and it's inconclusive.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So there's our game. I think Mike won.
Yes. How many points? Come on.
I had
putting four. Negative one.
Yeah, I had negative one. And
3-0. 3-0. Okay. I picked up the Fighting Irish as 1 point.
So, congratulations.
Thanks, Craig.
Now I'm in a bad mood.
Like the king of douchebaggery.
I don't like losing trivia.
Hey,
games.
I wasn't the one that said you were going to get that question.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, that was my brother who decided to jinx me. Shag.
Anyway.
Okay.
Craig's typing. I think he's changed the outro now. This is the third version.
Yep.
I don't remember what the first thing was, but then he got mad at me and changed it to something, and now he's mad at you, Kurt, and he changed it to something else.
He's mad at me?
I don't know. He's got an evil grin on his face.
No.
Great.
Well, I got a little something that we can pass some time with, and I'll link to this.
Is it in your pants?
Oh.
Okay. Wow. You don't want to make it to a year on this thing, do you?
No, I was just trying to see if you'd change your outro thing again.
No. If every proposed boundary for a state in the United States of America,
okay,
and every proposed inclusion of something that isn't a state now but could have been,
how big would the United States be?
Would have been happened. How many states would we have in the union?
Who gets to guess first?
Oh, yeah, we'll do the game show. we'll do closest without going over.
Okay.
And Mike, you go first.
Ooh.
You can't do closest without going over with only two people and let Mike go first.
Because then he's just gonna guess one.
Two.
Okay, well, we'll do closest, actual closest. Oh, actual above or below, closest, okay, by number.
All right, I'm going to say 161.
161. Kurt?
I'm going to go lower than that. I'll go 94.
Now you're going to make me do math in my head.
Oh, it was somewhere in between those two.
I think 124. I think 94 makes it. That's 30 off.
Yep.
And you're upwards of
37.
Right. Yep. So, yeah, 124 states.
Wow.
Kurt, you are in the state of Wisconsin right now. What state would you be in if this had happened?
Michigan?
No, it's a map. And some in some places, they just kind of gave things names based on like what might have been the name, right, or they just gave it because it's the part of the country.
Such territory.
Yeah.
Or...
You would be in what's referred to on this map as Red Wisconsin.
It's kind of true.
Yeah. So and then down in the south is Blue Wisconsin.
Kind of true.
And the Milwaukee, Racine, Kenosha area is actually part of Chicagoland. Like, they were going to take that whole edge of the lake down there. And then ours is kind of boring.
I'm from Chicagoland.
Chicagoland. Ours is kind of boring. We're down here in Atlanta. We would be in North Georgia. There was the potential of there being a boundary that kind of ran right through the middle of the state. There's a few that are not changed. South Carolina, North Carolina are pretty much exactly as they are now.
What was that?
Kansas and Nebraska aren't too far off. Colorado's pretty close.
What about that that weird thing with around Toledo and the southern Michigan, northern Indiana around that area? Northern Ohio? Northwestern Ohio, really I guess.
There's nothing going on there.
Yeah, that was just...
There's Ohio and West Connecticut and Washington. There's like... Ohio's broken into like three pieces on this map.
Okay.
Indiana's more or less what it is now. Pretty close. The panhandle of Alaska is called Seward. Puerto Rico, Virgin Islands, Cuba, the Northern Mariana Islands, Guam, and American Samoa are all included as states in this variation.
Okay. What's Texas look like?
Texas is Texas, Jacinto, Lincoln, North Texas, and part of Trans-Pecos, which is also part of New Mexico.
Trans-Pecos.
Trans-Pecos. I'm from Trans-Pecos. We got vampires down here.
I want to suck your blood.
Y'all.
Notice my protruding pointy canine teeth?
And, you know, Baja California, the peninsula down there that's part of Mexico, is concluded and because...
It's California?
Well, no, it's Baja California. It would have been a state.
It's its own separate state.
If we would have acquired it or conquered it or did something back in the day.
It's Mexico's pinky finger.
Yeah, there's little portions of Mexico that's part of this
thumb.
As well. Including my favorite Mexican, they're not counties, are they provinces in Mexico? Whatever they're called, the different demarcations.
I think they're actually just called states.
Maybe I was thinking states, too.
It's the one called Chihuahua.
Chihuahua?
Yes. Chihuahua. That could have been part of us.
Chihuahua.
Well, I just because I saw...
Sandwiched between Chihuahua and Chihuahua.
Yeah. I saw some, maybe it was put on, but it was somebody had to pronounce that word. Like it was some girl, blonde girl or something. It was some joke or whatever. And she pronounced it Chihuahua. Because
wasn't Miss South Carolina.
Well, I'm sure she knows the word Chihuahua, but nobody, she didn't necessarily know that it's spelled kind of oddly.
Yeah.
I mean, it's spelled phonetically. It's perfectly phonetic.
To this
Spanish.
Day, I can't read epitome without thinking epitome.
Epitome.
Oh, chaos is the one I always look at and think chouse.
Iowa is pretty much like it was. There's all sorts of little bits and pieces. McDonald, that's part of what is now Missouri. That's just what they're calling it. I don't know if that was maybe because there was some guy named McDonald who suggested that be part of something else. So it wouldn't be part of Missouri.
Is it shaped like a Big Mac?
No, it's a little tiny area. So there you go.
Shaped like a chicken
McNugget. I'll link to these. There's a whole map. It's kind of interesting just to see how things are all broken up. Navajo. Natanqua. There's a lot more Native American names in this version than there are in the U.S. currently.
Well, that would be, I would think that would be.
They're all
if you needed to come up with a name, that would be the obvious
That'd
default.
Be a good one to go to the tribe
because,
from that area.
Because those places were already named something.
Before we came in and killed everybody and named it something else.
Yeah.
Because we're a bunch of a-holes from Europe.
America.
America. Kentucky and South Kentucky. So
wow.
Yeah.
Isn't that kind of all of Kentucky?
Well,
except for Louisville.
I don't know that I really call Kentucky all that southern. I mean, if you draw a line through the middle there, you get Kentucky's kind of more northerly than it is south, although everybody considers it part of the south.
Although, if you've ever been in southern Indiana and southern Illinois, you know you're already in the south.
Oh, yeah.
I've met some normal people from Kentucky, but I've also met some pretty abnormal people from Kentucky.
Abnormal. All right. Is that going to be it?
I believe that's it.
Hey, Kurt. Thanks for coming on the
show. Thank you, Kurt.
It was a pleasure.
Good to have you.
And thanks for bringing that nice history quiz. That was fun.
Make sure you
let him win next time. Okay. No, the next game show we play is probably going to be the QI thing.
Hey, I'm sure, that one I can't lose.
Yeah, and you can ensure that I do. because you're the one who's going to assign all the points.
No, I'm not going to be like that.
All right. Where can they find us, Mike?
Nerdburgershow.com, at Nerdburgershow on Twitter and Facebook. And please email us. We're desperate to hear from you. Just kidding. Nerdburgershow@gmail.com.
Wow.
Going with the whole douchebag theme. Okay. It is my resting state, right?
Mm-hmm. On the next episode of Nerdburger, Craig sneaks up behind Mike, levels him, and spikes a football in his smarmy game show winning face.
And then Mike takes his tuba that's, or his trombone that's bent in half and shoves it up Craig's.
I'll have to rethink that plan.
Bye.
Bye-bye. We didn't get to use our buzzers because Kurt did the game show the wrong way.
That's my new buzzer that I got for Christmas.
I go first.
Okay.